Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day with a goal of informing and motivating listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 5 regional stations, as well as 4 additional stations in Virginia. There's now a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities. We sincerely need your help to accomplish this mission. Your support of any amount is needed to take this next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support us in this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale.
Go to fcbcatjax.com and click the donate button or send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention radio. Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Congressman Mike Hill, former representative for District 1 in the state of Florida. Congressman Hill, thank you so much for staying with us and for your taking time today. Just before the news break, we were talking about taking the stand, telling the truth, and the need to do so, as we talked about with Robert F. Kennedy, talking about the dangers of the COVID vaccine and why it ought not to be accepted or received. But I'm reading article after article after article each and every day where doctors are being suspended or their license canceled by the medical association because they tell the truth to their patients. What is your thoughts on that? What does it invoke in you when you hear that? And how should the patient, we the people, how should we respond in that realm?
Well, first of all, Dr. Youngblood, it's a shame that that's happening to those doctors. Simultaneously, we should expect that. When you speak the truth, and you speak the truth when there is a time when the regime is speaking lies, they want to stop you from speaking the truth, but you must continue to do so. You know, we have a commandment, thou shalt not bear false witness. Mm-hmm. Don't lie. You must tell the truth. But Jesus even told us that people will revile you and persecute you and say all manner of evil about you when you tell the truth. Jesus is the truth. So when you speak the truth, you are speaking Jesus. You are speaking of him and about him. And the world hates to hear the truth. What we must be willing to do is understand and accept that speaking the truth can have its consequences, but you must do it anyway. You have to speak the truth. You know, when Jesus said with the Beatitudes, and he said, when people revile you and persecute you and say all manner of evil about you, he said, rejoice and be exceedingly glad.
Amen.
Because they treated the prophets the same way, and great will be your reward in heaven. Amen. So we might bear some temporary pain while we're here because we speak the truth. We must do it anyway because great will be our reward in heaven.
In other words, our speaking the truth will have eternal rewards for it. That's very well spoken. Thank you for saying that. Ladies and gentlemen, that telephone number is 831-0917, 831-0917. If you'd like to ask a question, join in the dialogue and discussion today, we'd love to hear from you. Have you been turned away from a physician's office because of not having a vaccination or refusing to wear a mask? I've read an article very recently where a man that was on the waiting list for a life-saving treatment, i.e., I believe it was a transplant of some type for either a lung or a liver, and because he refused to take heart transplant, he refused to take the vaccination to do so, and so he was left without being on the list. In fact, I'm reading the headline: Boston Hospital takes dying patient off heart transplant list because he's unvaccinated. The family of the patient who is fighting for his life is speaking out after Boston Hospital removed him from its heart transplant list because he is unvaccinated against COVID-19. Now, Congressman, Let me set the stage and ask the question. Supposedly, this cabal, the Biden cabal, the Biden administration, the socialist, Marxist, liberal, BLM, Communist Democratic Party, all agree that they're doing all of these things to save our lives, to be help us medically speaking. How do you consider this as a medical help if a man is taken off the heart transplant list because he's unvaccinated, which will ultimately kill him? In the process, they say they're trying to help him health-wise by wanting him to take the vaccination. That's an oxymoron to me.
It's evil, Dr. Youngblood. When you know that taking him off this list, that he is going to die, I would say is akin to a committing slow murder. The man is going to die if he doesn't get a new heart. And here he was on the list, ready to receive one, and they remove him because he would not take the vaccine. And the reason they said, their justification for that, was that if we do the heart transplant and he's not vaccinated, then he is likely to die more quickly because he's not vaccinated. That's nonsense. If he takes the vaccine, it could probably cause more injury to him than if he did not. And that is even beside the point. The point is that we have the right to decide what we want to do with our body. It's a God-given right. It's not a government-given right. You can't tell me that I need to be vaccinated in order to participate in this society. Healthcare is not a communal activity. My individual healthcare belongs to me. Now, what should be done instead of pushing these vaccines, which we know is proper medicinal protocol, is that if someone is sick, then that person should be isolated and treated. That works. Normally, you can stay at home or you can go to the doctor, receive your prescription, and you stay at home until you're well so that you don't spread it. But to force someone to take a vaccine is evil, it's illogical, in particular when there's so much data out there showing that these vaccines are ineffective, they don't work, and they are causing a number of deaths and physical abnormalities that are happening. People are coming down with myocarditis. They are experiencing stroke. Their blood is clotting. The vaccines have an awful lot of risks that are associated with it. And for them to deny this man, who, by the way, is a husband and a father. I believe he has four children.
Yes.
To deny him to receive this heart transplant simply because he won't take the vaccine, I call it murder.
I call it murder, and it is very, very extreme, and it's being pushed. And the thing that is so concerning for me and causes great consternation in my mind is the great big huge elephant in the room question. Why? And you explained that earlier in your discussion. It is the push to form a new government, a one world global government, and part of that is to bring about the totalitarian regime. And if we're forced to take a vaccination and we submit, if we're forced to wear a mask and we submit, the next step would be forcing us to remove and to relinquish our self-protection, self-defense, i.e. all guns. That happened, as you said, that happened in 1998 in Venezuela. And now look at, they have no ability to preserve and protect any rights in Venezuela. But what you touched on just a moment ago, Congressman, it is legally known, and I'm sure you're aware of it, as informed consent. Informed consent. So if we have the law requirement of informed consent, and we do. What's wrong with asking a physician, if I'm supposed to take the vaccine, tell me the side effects, tell me the statistical data, tell me what will happen. Most physicians will recommend some type test that they have no idea of the side effects. I recall and writing prescriptions and will say, take this, you'll be better. They do not give you informed information so that you can consent to that. I never will forget. It's been a number of years ago now. I was in the hospital, and about 10:30, 11 o'clock, the nurse walks in with a handful or a cupful of pills, and she said, take these. There's four or five in there. And so I pull one out at the time, and I would hold it up. What's this for? And she would tell me what it's for. I said, well, I don't need that. Another one, she said, I said, what's this for? She said, well, the doctor has it on the list for you to take. I said, I haven't taken that medication in years. It's not still prescribed for me. And we did that for each one. Finally, she took the five pills in the cup, flung them into the sink, and walked out. The physicians, the medical association today, the whole medical apparatus, they do not want to respond to the patient by informed consent. Proper informed consent, as I view it, on the things like remdesivir, would be to tell the patient, you have a 20 to 50% chance that it will shut your kidneys down. You have a 20% chance that it will destroy the liver. You have and give you the information, let you decide if you want it. But they do not do that. They should be held, in my opinion, criminally responsible for what they're doing to the populace today in the United States of America and around the world. I'm looking at an article that says State Department blocks, or state Democrats block, ivermectin treatments, kill public comment. This article was dated January the 23rd. And a Twitter video, Virginia Democratic Senator Louise Lucas crumples a piece of paper to signify what Democrats intend to do with the Republican bills. A bill in Virginia State Senate that would have allowed health care providers to prescribe ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine was blocked by Democrats after they shut down all public comment session and ordered the state capitol police to remove citizens from the chamber. As the Democrat majority in the Senate Education and Health Committee moved to kill the Republican bill, Democratic Committee Chairwoman Louise Lucas cut the remote audio feed of the Charlottesville radio show host, et cetera, et cetera. After about a 9-6 party line vote, Lucas banged her gavel and ordered the police officer to remove doctors, family members, COVID patients, and others who came to speak in favor of the new bill. Quote, Virginians are dying. A woman who was ordered to leave shouted out as she was being dragged out. The article further says, holding up a copy of Robert F. Kennedy's book, The Real Anthony Fauci, she said the White House coronavirus advisor, who suppressed the use of ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, people across this nation are dying as a result of this man, end quote. So, Congressman Hill, elaborate on that for our listeners to understand a little more. And I've touched on it pretty broadly about informed consent. Do we have the right of informed consent when it comes to the patient's Bill of Rights in the state of Florida and the patient's Bill of Rights on a national basis? What does that connote, and how should our listeners receive that?
Yes, absolutely, Dr. Youngblood. We do have the right of informed consent, and I would say it goes beyond just what might be written in law. There is a moral obligation, yes, to tell someone what could happen should they take a certain medication. And I find the episode you just shared with you so telling. I have been to the hospital with loved ones many times. I've been fortunate where I haven't been admitted into the hospital my entire life, except for one time when I had my wisdom teeth removed, and that was just overnight to make sure everything was okay. But I have had other family members, and I did know that it was important for me to be there with my loved ones,
yes,
not only for their support and for their care, but also to ask many questions. Whenever the nurse would come in and wanted to do a procedure, I started asking questions. Why? What will this do? What's going to be the effect? What can we expect? And when a doctor came in, I did the same thing. And you know, Dr. Youngblood, right now, they close off the hospitals to family members and visitors. And I think part of it is because they don't want to be held accountable. They don't want to ask those questions. I saw a video clip of a nurse who was saying that it's criminal what, yes, she observed, the negligence of people who are admitted into that hospital. I believe it was in New York, of the the lack of care that they were receiving and how people were dying. And I have friends that I know personally who were given that remdesivir and it killed them. They were in that hospital, went in with COVID. 2 weeks later, maybe 3 weeks later, they were dead. They were given remdesivir, put on those ventilators, and they died. And it is criminal. It's a shame. And we're not seeing enough doctors being held accountable for that. For a doctor to say to me, we go by CDC guidelines, I would ask the question, what if those guidelines are wrong? Are you still going to follow them, just blindly follow them when they're wrong, when it can be proven that they're wrong? There are doctors around the world who are speaking up right now who are saying that the protocols that are coming from the World Health Organization, from the NIH, from the CDC, that they're wrong, and we should not be following them. That just because they're, and Dr. Youngblood, I have to make this point. Why are they forcing these vaccines and not allowing people to use ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine? It's because of money. Mm-hmm. They are making billions of dollars off of this, of forcing these vaccines. And they could use that then to fund how they want to make their transformation to a one-world government. You see, these pharmacies, they're going to be a part of, or let me say it differently, the CEOs of these pharmacies who are making all this money, they're going to be a part of the elite group, and they know that. They know that they are not going to suffer from this one-world government, from people being told what to do, from people not having food on the shelves, as we see in Venezuela and we're seeing in America now, because a totalitarian government cannot, it is impossible, make all the decisions that are necessary for society. It can't function. And we're seeing that with the Biden regime. They have caused these supply chain disruptions. Not only in the U.S., but it's affecting people around the world because you cannot make those decisions. You must let freedom reign, and it will take care of itself. Adam Smith called it the invisible hand, where things will operate because people will do what is in the best, their own best interest, and things begin to operate smoothly. We don't need someone who thinks they're smarter than everyone else trying to tell us what to do.
What Rand Paul says, in fact, Senator Rand Paul says to St. Anthony Fauci that he should be charged with mass murder, and I believe he's exactly right. Congressman Hill, you alluded to a video that you had watched, and I believe that was the one, and I've also seen that. Let's touch on that a little deeper. It was, and I can't recall the nurse's name, a registered nurse. She heads up an organization called American Frontline Nurses. And she talked about leaving Texas and going to New York at the apex of the outbreak of COVID in New York to help the hospitals there. And she went into, and the video was from the hearing by, what was the senator's name?
Ron Johnson.
She was before Ron Johnson's committee in the hearing, and she went into great detail about the dangers of patients being in the hospital and the hospital shutting out any family members from being able to see and know. She said patients were being starved to death, that patients were literally not being given food or water, and she had to argue with, battle with, and fight with the physicians to try to save the patients' lives, and they were giving them medications, remdesivir and others, that would kill them, and she went to battle for them. Now, I'm thankful for individuals like that. By the way, she's been fired from her hospital privileges in Texas in the hospital that she'd been working at. She has her own clinic where she treats patients, and she does so based on what's best for the patient and not what the federal government says. A nexus that is there that our listeners need to understand, Congressman, the nexus is the M-O-N-E-Y, as you touched on two or three times in this broadcast today. It's the money. These physicians receive an upcharge, a bonus of up to 20%. Hospitals receive, take the total hospital bill, a person's in there for a month, 2 months, 3 months, whatever it may be, they get reimbursed an extra 20% on top of what they normally would get, an extra 20% if they put you on these medications that the federal government's proven, like remdesivir, which will destroy the kidneys. In fact, conversely, ivermectin, according to the research, is 62% effective in preventing COVID mortality and 86% effective in preventing the infection to begin with. And yet that is not being used. And as one physician said, and I watched the video this morning, he said that with the ivermectin, it is about 2 cents a pill on an international market. And the remdesivir is about $3,000 per unit that's prescribed to a patient. And yet, furthermore, Congressman, I'll then turn it loose and let you respond. The hospital's number one, if they take a person with a broken leg, put him in the hospital, and 2 days later declare he has COVID, ching, ching, all of a sudden, between the PPE and the upcharge funds that's given from the COVID funds from the federal government, that hospital will inure a benefit of about $100,000. Plus, then, if they assign them remdesivir, it's another 20% increase. So it's all about a money game, regardless of who they kill. Respond to, first of all, and I think you've seen that video as you touched on, of that registered nurse that's talking about the dangers of not having a patient advocate, someone there. As you said, you go to the hospital with your family members to advocate for them, to protect their interests, to ask questions. Why is that so vital? And second or third to that, tertiary to that, would be in the state of Florida now, I understand two bills have been introduced in the Senate and one in the House that would allow patients' families to visit in the hospital, even if they had to robe up in a robe and put on a mask, but they could see their family members. Tell us what you know about that. Tell us the dangers of not having an advocate in a hospital with what's going on today.
Well, Dr. Youngblood, God himself said, it is not good for man to be alone. Mm-hmm. And when someone goes into the hospital and they are isolated and kept alone, that is a dangerous situation. You are more likely to recover when you have that contact, that support from your loved ones and from friends who will come and see you in the hospital. It helps you in your recovery. There is no dispute about that at all. I applaud that young nurse who stood up and again spoke the truth. And because she spoke the truth, there was a price to be paid for it, and they fired her from her job. But she spoke the truth anyway. And that is what we need, more and more people to stand up and speak the truth. Everyone in your listening audience, Dr. Youngblood, should be willing and able to speak the truth, regardless of what the outcome of that should be. We have to speak the truth. I saw where Dr. Jordan Peterson, who the psychologist up in Canada, decided he was going to quit from working at the University of Toronto because he was prohibited from speaking the truth. Mm-hmm. He said, we must speak the truth no matter what. And I agree with that. We have to, not only because of our to do what is right, but because it is a moral, it is a commandment from God himself. Speak the truth at all times.
Congressman, I'm sure you're aware of the fact, and we'll touch on this for a moment, but right here in Jacksonville, the Mayo Clinic, a lot of patients to die. They vigorously fought the patient's family in court to try to prevent the family from prevailing. Here's an article on that and another. Two families fought hospitals to allow alternative COVID treatments. Now their loved ones have died. Two men on ventilators, one in Florida and one in Arizona, died within 24 hours of each other, even as their families were still fighting with hospitals for the chance to try alternative treatment. Now, I could read several more paragraphs in that article, but the point is, the families were fighting. They'd gone to court. The court had first said no. They appealed it. The court then stood for the patients and the patient's rights for the hospital to administer alternative medications, i.e. HCQ and ivermectin, that would save the life of the patient. And then the hospital appealed that decision, and it was stayed, and therefore the hospital did not respond to the patient's need, and the patients died. Where is not only informed consent, but where is the right, and it's a federal law as I understand it, the right to have alternative medications if you require them, even if they've not been FDA approved, that might be a lifesaver. What have we done with that, and how should the families respond? I say to every family, in my opinion, every family gets you the biggest, baddest attorney, file suit against the hospital, file suit against the doctor, file suit against the system to save your family member's life.
Absolutely, Dr. Youngblood. They must be held accountable for what they are doing. You know, and ivermectin and HCQ are FDA approved.
Yes, yes.
Those are drugs that have been used around the world for decades, and they've been shown to be very effective. Why they would not do it, I guess it's because they would not get paid enough if they did it. But the fact that they are willing to sacrifice a person's life, that they would go so far as to go to court to avoid giving someone treatment, is unconscionable. And yes, they should be held accountable. I believe not only lawsuits, they should face criminal charges.
Yes.
In my mind, they
Absolutely.
Should be brought to trial. And if it can be determined that they intentionally withheld treatment that they knew would work, then they should be held accountable for that, and jail time should be available to them.
Absolutely. We've got about 20 seconds left on the broadcast, Congressman. Speak to the fact that Joe Biden, and it's through his administration, that the monoclonal antibodies have been stopped. The authorization has ceased for the state of Florida. Is that some type of retaliation against the state of Florida and our governor?
It is. It's a political move, Dr. Youngblood. And I read from one author, and I agree with him, that that's a signal from the Biden regime that they are giving up on Florida in terms of the Democrats winning anything in 22 and in 24. That if you're going to run for governor like Charlie Crist and Nikki Fried are, you might as well forget it. The Democrat Party has given up on Florida. They are saying it belongs to Republicans now.
Well, I'm thankful for that. Congressman, thank you for joining us today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as, once again, we face the issues.
Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida. Located 1/2 mile south of I-295. FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 9:45 p.m., for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study. Prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in the same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard in its entirety 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM and 93.3 HD3. You're also invited to tune in Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. on Talk 100.3 for expository preaching. Tune in and invite others to listen.